Hello and welcome to a very special, very fun, very weird episode of Turn Out a Punk with the infamous Max Creeps. I have both members here with me on the show, which is PC Bullshit and Max Blastic. This is a band that I was, you know, unfortunately not as aware as I should have been of prior to a series of tweets going out a few months ago from various legends and punk and music in general, lamenting the breakup of the Max Creeps, and including Joey Shithead, who said that they were the first punk band in Seattle. And of course, you know, this sent me into a bit of a tizzy having to research this band, and lo and behold, they are not in any of my punk books, and they have been completely written out of the history of rock and roll, and you will hear why in a second, or why they claim they were written out of the history of rock and roll. This is a very, as I say, interesting, fun conversation with a couple of people that have seen it all, and I'll leave it at that. They have a brand new album coming out, their first album coming out, Nine, which will be in stores on May 13th. They have a new song dropping today, as of this episode coming out, called The Internet Killed Me. And you can check that out. We'll have a link in the description of this episode. As I say, this is a very interesting conversation. If you pay close attention, you're going to hear a lot of actual really interesting history of Seattle music. And we touch on a lot of cool stuff in this one with some very interesting characters. Let's leave it at that for now. All right. Sit back, relax, and enjoy Max Creeps on Turned Out a Punk. How's it going, Max Creeps?
You're muted.
I don't think I'm muted.
No, I can't see myself. Why would I want to be muted? Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Okay. Well, that's good. Can you see me? I can see you, but I can't see myself.
No, if you go to the bottom, there's that little camera at the bottom shape right beside the microphone. And you click on that.
Yes, I'm there. I see that now, yes.
All right. How are you doing? Excellent. Amazing to talk with the legend.
Yeah, just getting my bearings here. Where am I? Is it? Oh yeah, I got it. Yeah. Ah, good now. Yeah, very good.
Yeah. Well, mm-hmm. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I guess I got to start off with the question I always ask people when they come on here, which is, how did you first come across punk? Being that you kind of predate punk and are one of the bands that sort of kickstart this whole thing, I want to know what your associations with the word are first.
Well, you know, when we first started, like, punk, you know.
I know.
Yeah, I know. It was sort of somebody assigned it to that what we were doing, which I suppose in hindsight was not all wrong. We were just tired of the status quo. We weren't tired of status quo, the band, but status quo of, you know, the good mellow music that permeated the musical charts at the time.
Oh, I think we have your bandmate running in right now.
Oh, is he dialing it up?
He's dialing in. Oh, we can edit this all together at the end, so don't worry. This will flow like a normal conversation.
One thing I learned in this business is don't worry if you don't have to. There's no reason to worry. Hey, man! I haven't seen you for
In this business.
Yeah.
What I've learned in this business.
Yeah.
Is just to tell everybody to fuck off.
Well, those are the words to the wise, you know, and if you are wise, you will fuck right off.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I actually should really start off by getting you both to introduce yourselves, because I think our audience should be acquainted. But one thing about the Max Creeps is your legend hasn't spread nearly as far as it deservedly should. So can we start off by both of you introducing yourselves, please?
Okay, I'll take that lead. My name is Max Blastic. I am in the Max Creeps and have been for many, many years. To say our musical career was a bit rocky would be an understatement, but we finally have finished our second album. Oh, my name is Max Blastic. That's to give you the short thing. I'll turn it over to.
That's kind of a long answer.
Yeah, well, you've never been one to complain, never been one not to complain about my answers. So it's your turn now. Here you go. Here.
I'm PC bullshit. I play guitar. I sometimes play drums. We've had this band for decades. We've had the highs, the lows, the mountaintops, the deepest valleys. Played some of the best shows you've ever been to and experienced. We're not included on many others, like the US Festival. Can we start there?
We can definitely start there.
Let's start with the US Festival. And I guess, yeah, we could talk a lot about that because we weren't included on it. I watched it on TV, some of it. That was like Emerson, Lake, and Palmer, right?
Well, there's a legendary sort of Clash performance and the Van Halen performance, which people, look back upon as being sort of fond memories of that festival, I guess.
Yeah, my fondest memories are... not being invited and not going to it and not paying attention.
That was right in our recovery phase. You know, what happened? Your name is, what is your name, sir?
I'm Damien.
Damien.
Yes.
Damien.
PC bullshit.
I'm PC bullshit. Damien, I may have met you at a different time. We have hung out with you quite a bit at a different time, correct?
Were you guys at the
Yes.
Were you guys at the US Festival?
Sadly, I was not, but I think I've punished you before, PC bullshit, because to me, your band, much like the legendary Dogs from Detroit, are a band that was always there just before the explosion happened. And because you're a band that kind of is instrumental in causing this explosion, I think, you know, be it in the UK when you guys first meet on stage during the David Bowie, the famous Last Ziggy Stardust show, or going back to Seattle when you're there just before punk kind of hits, to going to LA just before the mass scene kind of explodes into whatever it becomes. You guys are always there just at the wrong time, the right place, but just a little too early.
Yeah, someone should make a movie about that.
I think it would be, you know, right place, wrong time.
No. See, we'd turn it around. It'd be wrong place, wrong time.
That's true. Well, I don't know. I think as a fan of music, I wanted to ask you, like, so you guys are both born in Seattle, but weirdly meet in the UK. What were you guys into prior to going to the UK and meeting each other, music-wise?
My parents took us there for a holiday.
You stayed. I snuck along with his family. They didn't know I wore a disguise as a dog.
You were our family dog?
I was the family dog.
Holy S on a stick of grass.
Somehow we both met in London, You know, the David Bowie show, we heard it was going to be the last Ziggy Stardust show.
We didn't know that at the time. I don't even know how we got to that show now that I think about it, because my parents, for some reason, just abandoned us, and the family dog, and we had to find our own way back. But I remember like looking around outside the show, because we knew that there was something exciting going on there. And out in the dumpster, there was some cool stuff. So I was digging through that with the dog, and the stage door was open. So we just wandered in, and we were backstage. I believe there's even a photo, if you can imagine that, of us backstage at that show. And it was at that show that PC appeared, and the dog disappeared.
Something that's never been mentioned, Steve Jones was also at that show.
Wow. That's wild. A very young Steve Jones, too.
Yes. And he saw kind of the things that Max and I were wearing. You know, we had some safety pinned, you know, together shirts. It wasn't fashion. It was just what we had. We were on our last clothes.
Oh, PC had a very nice dog collar on, of course, because that's up until that point, we thought he was the family dog, but clearly that was about to change.
So the US Festival, let's get back to that. You mentioned the Clash, Bina. So flash forward, Max and I, we form our band, we write our songs on a cattle boat back from London to Seattle. We get down to the Mask. Somebody tells us to go there. We explode at the Mask. You say wrong time, wrong place. But we exploded there and were touted by the finest of Hollywood. Charo, Paul Lynde, Rip Torn.
Ephraim Zimbalist Jr.
Touted. We were given drugs and alcohol, which was fine with us.
We were plied with drugs. Drugs, alcohol.
People wanted to be near us. Women wanted to be with us. Men wanted to be us. And they all gave
be
us.
Be us? What does that word mean?
I don't know.
Well, I think BS in the sense that, like, you know, like you're saying, like, once you guys go to rehab, that's when it really explodes. Like, when Alice Bag was on the podcast, she talked about how there were 100 punks back in the original Mask days. So, you know, you guys were the toast of that town, but it's still so small at that point. Like, seems like when you guys were in rehab, that's when it really explodes. And that's when you start having those giant shows at the Olympic Auditorium and places like that.
Santa Monica Civic.
Exactly.
All these bands playing our songs. We get off, we see the US, we are in for 3 years. Nobody goes there for 3 years. The man was trying to keep us down.
Somebody was trying to keep us in there.
Yeah.
I kind of lost track of things, because the fact that the bar there sucks. There's nothing good about it.
Nobody was touting us.
No, and nobody plays cool jams. Nobody plays anything. There's no guitars. There's no drums. But there was this room, and it's called the room to make you forget. When you start feeling bad about being in the BFC, as we ended up calling it, kind of as a covert code word, the room to make you forget. They put
Damien,
something like this
use,
on you.
You can use BFC if you want to.
Okay.
And just remember, you start complaining about the peas and carrots, all you get to eat there, and some steamed chicken. I remember that too. They put on a thing on your head like this thing very much here. It's a trigger warning. And they put you in this room, and they turn out the lights, and you get a little headache, and then you come out and you don't remember anything anymore. And they're trying to make us forget our songs, because they're in cahoots with the powers of the scene, and they didn't want anyone to know. They didn't want us to know. They wanted us to forget the songs, but we didn't. See, that's the thing. We still remembered those songs, so we know the bits and pieces of the whole songs and the partial songs that were people said they were doing a tribute to us, but they actually took them all, and they tried to make us forget, etc.
Well, it brings up an interesting point, which I wanted to talk to you about. Like, if you look at, you're not the only band from that first wave of Seattle punk that, you know, is widely influential and kind of under acknowledged. Like, it's amazing. Like, the Whiz Kids are kind of credited now by a lot of people as being one of the first proto punk bands. Whether or not they were a band seems to be debated by a lot of people. But I was wondering, did you have any interaction with them before you moved to LA? Because you would have been sort of contemporaries once you came back from London.
Max would have been.
Yeah, I stumbled into Z Whiz Kids. And what they were doing was a bit of Z Cabaret. And, you know, to me, somebody should have bought him a distortion pedal. maybe bought him a Marshall stack. So, you know, they could have used a little Marshall full crank, I think, is what they were lacking to take him to the next level. otherwise, they were a great troupe.
Troop.
Yeah. They were a great troop, but they lacked what they lacked to be, you know, contenders with the Max Creeps is full Marshall crank.
Were you guys present at the TNT show? Because that's kind of heralded as being the first sort of like punk show in Seattle. And I've always wondered why you're not listed on those flyers. You know,
that show was a tip of the hat to Max Creeps, because the night before that show, we had our own show, and it was the TNT show.
Oh.
And it was full Marshall crank. It was at the IOGT hall, and it was the TNT show, and I'm not going to say bombs, but some dynamite was blown up. That's why it was the TNT show. And so the next day, we're driving around, and here's the TNT show. It's like, well, come on, you guys. You know, and you didn't ask us to be on the TNT show. Why? Because you're afraid of the TNT show. But, you know, stuff like that, you could call it coincidence.
All the time.
Somebody, you know, changes one letter of something we're doing, and it happens, and then it's influential. But, you know, we did our best.
It also seems at a certain point, there's like all the sort of first wave of Seattle punk kind of moves almost en masse, where you have like the Lude going to San Francisco, Tupperware's going to Los Angeles, and yourselves going to Los Angeles. Was that sort of like a why'd you need to leave Seattle, do you think?
The PC maybe you could explain that better.
Not proud of this. I got into a little bit of car thievery. Ending up with a high speed chase. Ended up with me getting out of the car and running and being chased by Mike the dog from the cop car. I jumped a couple fences, ran a few blocks, jumped a couple more fences, ran a few more blocks, got to Max's house. I said, I think it's time to leave, Max. It's time to go.
And I was like, look, I got stuff to do. I don't have time for, randomly pack it up and leave. But we did. You know, PC's my buddy. He, you know, it's like, well, okay, if we need to go, we need to go. And so we go. We weren't in Seattle very long after getting back from the cattle, but we had our legal pads and our Sharpies.
And just to call, you know, I was only borrowing cars. I wasn't.
You weren't stealing them. Yeah, just borrow. No. Yeah.
Just to be clear about that.
Yeah.
I get that.
You just need a car if you don't have the money to go to Hertz rent a car. What do you go do? If you need a car, you need a car. So you go, you appropriate one.
Our move to L.A. and the mask, you bring up the Tupperwares and the lewd. That was much later. You know, Trash Can Baby. I mean, that is the Max Creep song from 1975.
Yeah, except it was called Trash Can Maybe.
Yeah.
Is where we're going to end up. You know, so there again, they change one letter. Well, maybe two letters.
Yeah.
I forget how does that get spelled?
Maybe.
Maybe M-A-B-E-Y or M-A-B-Y?
M-A-B-E.
Why? M-A-B-E?
Yeah. M-A-B-E. Yeah, right? Maybe? I got the single. I can check the single.
Yeah. M-A-B-E-Y. M-A-B-Y. We spelled it M-A-B-Y. Trash can M-A-B-Y, maybe.
Oh,
and they changed it to Trash Can Baby. And at that point, my interest was over in the lewd, because there's another one of our songs appropriated, and you know, it's okay, same story as always.
Thanks, guys. Sex Pistols, Bodies, that was our song called Limbs.
Really?
Yeah, sure. Let's go with Stiff Little Fingers. Where do you want to go? Where do you want to go?
So where did you guys
gotta get a lay? We were young men. We were young men on the prowl.
Yeah, gotta get laid.
Get out of BFC. Gotta get away. What are you guys even talking about? Get away from what?
Oh, I thought it was gotta get laid.
That was our song.
Yeah. Oh, Stiff Little Fingers. Right.
Remember that one? I mean,
yeah.
We could go down the line here. We can go down the line. If you want to go band by band, we could do that. But I don't, you know, now it's time to celebrate what Max creates, what we've done. We've got through our ups and downs, our peaks and our valleys.
Yeah, talking about some of this old days, it kind of gives me trigger warnings.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. It gives me a case of the trigger warnings. Uh-oh. And I might just go off for no reason.
Okay, well, we'll try and avoid those set off points. We'll try and keep you at a reasonable level from snapping.
Don't go off for no reason.
He might just go off for no reason. That was one of our songs, Going Off for No Reason. Somebody else took that too. They made a song out of it, but you know.
Yeah. We are so
as you were saying.
Did you get to get a chance to go back to Seattle and see, like, once the scene did take off, or is that during your stint in rehab that everything starts happening with, you know, like the Fastbacks and the Silly Killers and kind of that next wave of bands that kind of, like, you know, post-lewd kind of era of bands?
I mean, listen, we were in the BFC writing songs still.
Stealing.
DOA from the Northwest writes a song called The Prisoner. That's our song from the VFC. Kind of starts there. We had the Subhumans, the Pointed Sticks. Then you get the Cheaters down in Seattle. You get the Enemy. You get the Fastbacks. You get the Veins, the Silly Killers. Eddie from the Silly Killers kind of took everything from, I got to say, for me. I hate to pat my own back. But Knife Manual, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing because I'm sitting here, you know, and I've got these books, you know, and I've read them backwards and forwards, and it's tragic how you're omitted from these histories right here, you know, like these histories of Seattle.
Who wrote that book?
Mark Yarm.
Yeah, Mark Yarm.
Greg Prado wrote the other one.
He's everywhere, that Greg Prado. What's that punk? Was he there?
I don't know. I don't think so. It's an oral history, so they just interview a bunch of people. But even they're omitting you guys, you know? Like, it feels
Hold on a second. It's an oral history, but it's a book. Do explain.
They take sound bites from people. And so I guess they might be editing parts of their conversations where you're being omitted. Like, it plays in your conspiracy argument about your band, about how you've been suppressed from these history books.
But a book can't be a sound, or can it? Is there something I missed out on in the last
few years? Oral history type thing. So it's like, it's not someone actually writing it first. It's spoken first and then printed verbatim.
It's like taking spoken word and changing it into book form.
Transcribing it. Exactly. Exactly.
I don't know that word, but taking talking and putting it in book.
Yeah, exactly. Taking them words and putting them into the other words.
Into book. Okay. That I can dig. Okay, cool. Thank you. Thank you for helping. I was like, I don't know.
I'd rather see the movie if they're talking already.
Right. Or like iPhone.
YouTube.
iPhone YouTubes. Yeah. But I sometimes have a problem with books, but. We'll talk about that later.
Another time. We can have that another conversation. Yeah. What was it like, though, when you did get out of the BFC? Like, where did you kind of go with the band? Because, like, you're in there for 3 years, but, like, you know, by the time you get out, there is sort of this underground explosion that is happening all across America that leads into, you know, like, an alternative explosion later on. But, like, you know, this sound that you guys kind of foster has spread.
Yeah. And when we got out of the clinic, the BFC, we spent a little bit of time on the street corner outside the BFC because we didn't know all we knew. I mean, sometimes when you're sent into that room and that makes you forget. And so we didn't really, we kind of lacked any skills.
You got to realize we were used to being touted. Which meant people would pick you up in cars, take you to Charo's house for a party, you know, fet you with dinners.
Yeah, and Ephraim Zimbalist Jr., in fact, was a fantastic chef.
And a driver. He was a great driver. A
wonderful, steady driver. So we get out of the BFC.
He smelled very nice as well.
So he was quite a lovely gentleman.
Yeah. Nobody pick us up or so we did actually when he said we were on the street corner.
We were
on the street corner for how many days?
I don't remember. My brain, they used that thing called the brain eraser.
They did.
It's to help you commingle with society. So they say. For me, it just made me black out for 20 days, 30 days, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, four weeks. So that there's a stretch that I don't remember.
Well, we get back to Hollywood from the BFC. You know, we go into a record store. We see all these new, a lot of colors on these records and a lot of, look at these words cut up out of newspaper and stuff. What is this crazy thing? Somebody put on some record there at the record store. We're like, that's our song. What's this band? Sex Pistols. Next record, The Clash. Those are our songs. Who's this band? The Clash. The Germs. They put on the new singles called No God. That was our riff. From the mask, lo and behold, we come to find out many bootleg cassette and reel-to-reel tapes were made from our mask shows. 52 sold-out nights to mask, lines around the block, I'll have you know. A whole scene was born out of those shows between the time we played those shows and the 3 years we were in the BFC, and they called it punk rock. We called it before that. What do we call it? Cranked up the Marshall's rock.
We just trying for rock. Full Marshall crank.
Yeah. Which well, you know, and I could see why punk kind of caught on. It's a little snappier, it's shorter than for full Marshall crank music, but full Marshall crank music really does describe the power of this stuff.
It does. And our songs weren't very long. If I remember back, that's a long time ago. I remember back in the day that, you know, if a song got to 2 minutes, we'd be like, let's shave a little of this off because we can't be.
We can't what are be we, Emerson, Lake, and Palmer here?
What are we getting to be Emerson, Lake, and Palmer from the US Festival? No, not the US Festival. But Emerson, Lake, and Emerson, Lake, and Palmer. Yeah.
Well, you know, I've always been fascinated about where it comes from. You know, like I talked to Mark Mothersbaugh one time. And he said that like Devo, he was inspired to do Devo by one synth note or synth chord on a Roxy Music record. And so what inspired the Max Creeps to kind of invent this sonic? Because you're kind of doing it almost as contemporaries to the Stooges. Like it wouldn't have been the Stooges, I imagine.
We liked, what was that one record? It was just a picture of the guy on the cover, and he's holding
the Stooges.
Yeah. What was that record?
Was it Raw Power?
That's the one. We liked that record.
Yeah.
Well, that was one that we had, and
Witch. The Witch, a big Northwest hit. Little kids.
Yeah.
The Witch.
She's the Witch.
Actually thought it was a witch on a broom. She had long black hair and a big black heart.
Well, I guess the Sonics and the Wailers, like there is that Pacific Northwest tradition, and Jimi Hendrix, of course, too, of like heavy, aggressive guitar music, which you're tapping into.
Oh, and I'm just to just to color something up, the Witch. I remember that record. I thought the song was by the Witch. I remember the 45, the little record, the big hole. It said the Witch on there. So we thought it was, that it was actually made by a witch, and. You know, and so it was even scary. That was pretty scary to think that a witch would make a record. And the song was called Sonics or something like that, which, you know, also a cool song title. We had a song called The Sonics, but of course we weren't witches, so ours was a little different. But I remember, we were really impressed that a song was made by the Witch.
Mick Ronson told us there that night at the Hammersmith, you guys are on to something. You know?
Yeah, that's a pretty big stamp of approval to get.
Well, you know, we knew we were on to something. We were like, yeah, Mick. We know. And we got on the cattle boat, and the sounds of the cattle boat, the engine sounds, the grating noises, the cow, you know, noises from their, not only their front mouth, but their back mouth. A lot of different sounds and inputs went into the Witch. What was that band called? The guy with the front?
Iggy.
Iggy.
Yeah, we didn't know because the record we had didn't say anything on the front.
It had nothing
on it. There was just a guy on it. And we thought that guy was pretty cool, actually. Yeah. And we liked that record a lot. But thank you for reminding me who it was. It was by, but are you sure that one record wasn't by the Witch?
Well, I think I've always heard of the Sonics, but maybe
I always thought that was the song and the record, the singer was the Witch.
But anyhow, had a really big influence on us.
All those details are not so important.
No,
you know, they're not so important as just what we did and what we came up with. And what the folks at Betty Ford tried to just sort of sweep under the carpet. And
just more importantly, Damien, how is this now going to influence you?
Not you again. There's you. I fell asleep for a second there, and I woke up, and there was you.
You.
Why? Why is it always you? Why? Why is it always you?
What was it like, though, in Los Angeles when all the next sort of wave stuff starts happening in terms of, like, hardcore, in terms of the Sunset Strip? Like, where did Max Creeps fit into that side of Los Angeles? Like, you know, it's a very violent place in a lot of ways. It's also, you know, a place with a lot of bands exploding, getting really popular. Like, where did you guys kind of fit into that ecosystem?
Well, did you ever in your life ever feel like you had been trivialized, marginalized, written off in, like, you're talking about a book earlier with the main part of the writing and the letters here, and then there's a little blank on the side, and then somebody writes something in the library book on the side. That's what we felt like. Marginalized. Like we were written in somebody's copy of the book, not in the regular printed part, but off to the side in like a pencil or a pen.
That's how
I felt. I felt
the pressure from new street gang. There'd be some gang, like a group. They'd want us to join their gang. We're like gangs. That's not, you guys are calling this punk rock. Or like, that's not punk rock. Or, you know, this is not fucking Max Marshall fucking rock either. And then we had Chief Daryl Gates breathing down our backs, the LA, PD. And we were being marginalized musically, although everybody was playing the music we invented. We were in many lawsuits. Can't talk too much about those.
Still are.
Still pending.
Pending, yeah.
Hundreds of dollars. Let me just say this. Hundreds of dollars of royalties that are due to us. Hundreds. Are on the line for the last, how long? Since 1979.
We though always say on this show that success can't be measured necessarily in financial terms, and it's much better if you measure it in terms of influence, because the reality is, like, look at all the ripples you caused, you know, and it's still going, and the influence is still there.
You know
there.
What we could do with hundreds of dollars?
Yeah, I know. I don't mean to trivialize hundreds of dollars.
We could get a van.
Yes.
We could get a PA.
I think they're more expensive now, to be honest. I think hundreds of dollars might not get you. We might be able to rent a van and rent a PA, but I think,
nobody will rent to us.
Hey, well, maybe you're onto something there, Mr. Man. Maybe, can you help us?
I would love to one day play a show with
you
with my
band.
Do you have a van?
No, my band only rents, because we realized very early on there's more financial reason to just keep renting the vans. But we would be very happy to split a van with you and go on tour, because, you know, the reality is, like, my band is as indebted to you as every other band that plays this kind of music. You know, as you say, like, you predate the TMT show, you know, like
our own TNT show.
Yeah, you're there first, you know, like, you know, like, you're there before these other people that are not even credited as being there first. So, you know, we'd be honored to one day take you on tour in our van and, you know, set up your gear for you and do all the stuff that bands should be doing for you guys.
Maybe play a little string synthesizer on the side too for some of the moments.
Yeah, exactly. You'll find anywhere you need me, you know, anywhere you need me, because, you know, that's the debt we owe you for all this stuff. I'm just glad that this record's coming out. And so finally there's going to be hopefully a little more credit given to the legend.
Yeah. Oh, I appreciate those kind words.
Yeah.
Because we've had a lot of harsh words leveled at us over the years, and not a lot of kind words, let's face it. Not a lot of kind words. Only harsh and harmful and hateful words.
Well, it begs the question, why now? You know, like, why is this the point for the Max Creeps comeback? You know, like, there's so many other points in history where it makes sense for a Max Creeps to reemerge, but why would you choose to wait till now?
Can I take this?
Please.
Can I just take this? Oh, we've been planning to do this for years. Planning, I say, if we could have just gotten this issue of our gas bill, shared gas bill, for $226, split in half. He said my half was $200 and that his half was $26. I went to some friends just to see what half was. They said they didn't think that was half. So that was what, about 1983? Where are we at now? We were in other lawsuits for hundreds of dollars in royalties, which would have taken care of this gas bill, BTW. However, we were in our own lawsuit over this damn gas bill. Now, I don't want to be all negative. We have finally figured out our gas bill. We've rectified the situation. We got 2 hours of studio time. We went in and blasted.
Oh, I've been muted.
Go ahead. You were muted? Muted you.
Somebody muted me, not me. I'm just trying to put my side of the story forward, and I know I'm not getting through. So
this place you're both going to get your time. So please go ahead. What Max, what's your side of the story?
The same.
Okay, good. Okay, well then I'm glad you're both on the same page finally, because I don't speak just for myself. I could be talking about Tony Molina or Danko Jones. Like, there's a whole range of people that have found influence from you guys. And
Danko owes so much to us.
He does. He admits it, though. He admits it. He's the first guy to say the Max Creeps are Danko Jones before Danko Jones.
Absolutely.
And Tony Molina, you know, he's a talented fella.
He's a genius. I think I think in all his bands, but he's also another one who knows his music history and will pay respects to the Max Creeps whenever it's brought up. You know, he and I've spent many times on tour talking about you guys over the years. And I remember turning him on to you guys after reading about it in some obscure zine back in the day, first time meeting him and stuff. So yeah, Max Creeps really kind of bring us all together, I think, in punk.
Happier words to my mind have never been spoken.
I went and saw DOA play Hardcore 81 10 days ago. I get there. Oh, Joey Shedhead would like to see you, PC. Yeah, it's about time. We're doing Hardcore 81. He goes, you know, we got this from your gig in 75. The Hardcore 75. We were showing some porn
That's where it really starts. It doesn't start with Hardcore 81. It really starts with Hardcore 75.
But you see where Hardcore came from?
Wow.
75, yeah, that was us. Yeah,
you finally said it. Like you said, you're Danko Joneses. You're giving us a little credit.
You know what? I'm glad.
Shithead, finally.
I'm glad it's all coming out now in the wash. You know, I saw a lot of.
Because I'm gonna play a couple for you tonight. You see.
I'm glad.
Show.
I'm glad that he paid it forward, and you know, even though you couldn't pogo, I'm glad that he, you know, is acknowledging the influence on them, like one of the most under-heralded influential bands in Canadian music history. You know, like I really do feel like all of these bands are going to hopefully be brought up to more attention at some point. Yes.
Hey, got to know who your enemy is. The enemy.
Here's a question for you, PC. Yeah. What did you do after that show? Did you go up to Ben Frank's?
No, I had a pulled hammy, like I said.
Oh, so you went to Denny's. You went to Denny's and had moons over my hammy.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, this has been incredible to get to speak to you. And anytime you guys want to come back on the show and talk about any of the stuff, because we still haven't talked about what you guys got up to in the 90s. But next time we'll get to that. And once again, I'm very happy that you're going to get the credit you deserve now.
Oh yeah, and you know, if there's one takeaway from this time that we've had together is if anything we did can unite a musical scene, we found over the last 40 some years that it's better to be united because it can help us in our goal to burn it down.
Yeah!
Yeah! Burn it down!
Burn it down!
We need everybody together in order to burn it.